Welcome to the One Player Podcast, the show on solitaire board games. I'm your host, Albert, and this is episode 333. Oh, I threw Julius for a loop there. He wasn't expecting me to say that.
Well, I mean, I had to restart my computer. I didn't actually get everything. I didn't get everything back online for everything that I have.
Our opening joke, listeners, is that we had audio troubles and it was very frustrating, but now we're live. No.
You are the kindest person ever to just push that button and
record and start recording when we're ready.
Whatever. Just start recording.
Julius, are you ready to roll?
Yeah, I'm ready to roll.
All right, was that the intro?
Oh, sure. I had forgotten that we were going to be. I had forgotten that we were going to be doing that.
Yes. Today, that is a game, a roll and write game, actually. That is what that is.
Yeah, it's a roll and write game. So today we are going to be discussing Dungeon Pages. Albert, have you heard about this one?
I had not heard about it before until you told me about it, and I have played through some of the basic sets, about two-thirds of it, and have quite enjoyed this. So I'm looking forward to talking about this. Yes.
Nice. So Dungeon Pages is a roll and write. It is a completely print-and-play game. All you need to have is a pencil, the printed pages, I guess the rule book, and some six-sided dice. You'll probably want to have three of a light color, three white dice, and three black dice. I actually have all sorts of different colors for mine, depending upon how it is that I'm feeling, because I have piles of dice in various places. But you'll need two different sets of colored three dice. Once you have those dice put together, you'll be able to pick up a character from a set of characters, like 50 of them, and a dungeon. Again, there's a set of 50 of them, and technically they're printed together, so you can just pick one of the pages all by themselves. And you will proceed to roll your way through the dungeon, hopefully fighting your way all the way to the eventual boss.
You said there's 50 of them? Because I only have six.
Well, you probably only got the initial set. I did back for the year-long set, and so every week we got a new one. And quite a while, I was playing through them every time as they came out and enjoying playing through them. And then I fell behind. I haven't done it consistently, but I still have a whole bunch of them to embark upon when I feel like.
Nice. Okay. Yes. I mean, for a roll and ride, it's surprisingly, I think, heavy and thinky, I thought.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, we'll get more into that. So you kind of described what the game's about. You kind of described the components, a couple PDFs.
Well, let's go a bit more into the components, I think. So, one of the reasons why I want to discuss the components is one of the things we normally discuss in components is A, the art, and B, the accessibility for it. And I think for a print-and-play game, you definitely want to talk about those topics to a certain degree.
Yeah, and I think the art in this game is actually pretty nice. Like you already said, each character is one page, and it has a picture of the character. They're all different art. It has their name, and then it has the page is divided into three sections. The top, which describes your character, the middle that has a dungeon, and the bottom that has information about wandering monsters and the monsters you encounter in the traps.
And technically, I divide that into two parts, because the wandering monsters is tied to the dungeons.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You could probably call it two. It's a nice layout. It's clean. It's very easy to follow.
Yeah, they make very good use of colors to be able to see where the monsters are, see where the dungeons are, see where the gold is. The colors are vibrant. They're clear. It's easy to identify things. In the core set, I think that the amount and visualization of those is clear enough, and I think that helps. I think that one of my concerns is it continued to add, and they increasingly became, in my opinion, to a degree, stuck with this. By the end of it, so you have the references for the different things that are available that you can unlock and grab. Mm-hmm. That reference got larger as the year went on, and there were different sorts of treasure that they introduced and different sort of weapon upgrades and things like that. And so you very much had to have sort of a reference card for all the different things. I kind of wish that some of the items and abilities were even more clear on what they did and how they work. Like, for example, the teleport potion. It's a thing with a little spinny blaze bit in the middle of it. If I showed you that icon, you probably wouldn't go like, oh, that lets me teleport anywhere it is that I want. Those, I wish that any dungeon that had a teleport icon had additional space for reference for what some of those more not obvious just based on the icon items did. They had a bunch of space to be able to use for monsters. They had a bunch of space to be able to use for the weapons on the top. I just kind of wish there was, you know, even more space, but you have to fit it all on a single page. So it is what it is.
And I mean, you might be able to reduce the size a little bit and fit more things, but it's already a good size. I don't think I would do that. And you said the reference in the rules kept getting longer and longer, so you couldn't just print out a page and have that handy when you played, right? You had to print a couple pages out, I guess?
In large part, that was actually one of the reasons why I stopped playing consistently. Was the third time they had to add something. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wait till the end and then have a whole bunch of that.
Oh, because you're... Yeah, I did not print out the rules at all, so I used it digitally. And that's not usually my style. I hate doing stuff digitally, but it actually worked pretty well. Because it was only, I think, 5 or 6 page rulebook. Pretty small.
So that's in terms of accessibility, I think, of the icons and the sheets. One other thing I do want to comment, by the way, and I think you mentioned this as well, is the art. I actually really enjoy the art. I think all of the art for the different characters is well used. They repeated a number of the pieces of art as time went on. Understandable. I wish that there was a little more color swap that went into it so that the art had some slight differences between them, but it wasn't. It wasn't color swapped or anything like that. They just kept using the same art. That's fine. It's understandable. The art was really nice, really good throughout the whole thing, very consistently good. Very supportive of all that, supportive of all the icons. All that looked really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's all very consistent, and I like the color schemes that they use for the art, too. I think it works really well. So I guess when you get the game normally, is it 2 PDFs now then? One for the characters and one for the rules, or is it all single file? What I have was 2 separate files.
Well, I mean, I don't know how it is that... I don't know how it is at this point, because okay. When they were getting it, I would just get a link to every week. I would just get another one and I would download it and add it to a folder on my
Windows
to have it all stored there.
Gotcha. Okay. What do you think about the theme? Do you feel like you're crawling in a dungeon?
I definitely think you do. I think that, you know, the use of the monsters, the use of the abilities, the weapons, I think all of that did. Perhaps the idea that, not even then, part of the mechanics is that you want to fully explore all of them to get extra experience. But frankly, when I'm playing like a Zelda game or something like that, or any other dungeon crawl, I'm the sort of person who will look around for all of the secrets and explore all the nooks and crannies. And so that's very much what I would do in an actual dungeon crawl. So that all did feel very thematic to me.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I'm the same way. I would explore everything and try and unlock all the unlockables and whatnot. And though it does not seem like you could unlock everything in this game, when you finish, you don't have enough experience points to unlock everything, so you get to choose what you have. And I found it interesting because the experience chart on the sheet where you mark off your experience points has way more space than you're ever going to find.
I think that sometimes it expands.
Does it? Okay. I was not able to, and maybe it's because I'm playing something wrong, potentially. I don't know. But it was fine, whatever. So, about the rules, then. Let's talk about the rules. Like I said, my rules are like 5 or 6 pages. They're very short. They're very, very clear, very procedural. All that was easy to follow. There's charts on the side that are easy to reference, to find the icons. I did find it a little weird that sometimes the icons were on page 2 and sometimes on page 3, and it didn't make sense to me how they organized that. I don't know why they're in separate pages. I kind of would have preferred them all, like you're saying, one page, you know, just to make it easy to refer. Mm. Just having too many icons all over the place is a little much for such a light game. Though, and again, like to something you mentioned earlier, when you're playing, most of the icons are not going to be relevant for that specific character, right? Only a handful of them are. A lot of them are very scenario specific.
They are.
So it seems like, it would be super handy to have it in the single sheet.
Oh, it's almost like I mentioned that.
Yeah, almost like, yeah. I'm backing you up, Julius. I got you back.
And as the rules expanded by the end of it, so in the beginning, all the rules are the same rules layout. And I like all the rules. All of it was easy to learn, easy to play with, easy to understand it. They added some additional clarifications and the additional notes as people understood stuff. It was the epitome of a living rule book when things weren't clear, which I think the only part that wasn't clear originally was about how diagonals worked. They just simply added it to it and they answered it. And all that was very good. And I enjoyed the year-long living rules, the year-long experience of playing through on a weekly subscription model. I really thought that was very fun just to do. And I'm maybe setting aside of the rules. But in the final version of the rules, so at this point in time, they filled up the entire column, because originally the column for the icon references, you know, had space on the bottom of them. And they filled up that entire one, added an additional icon reference sheet as an additional page, and then added another additional page as a separate file for even more icon references.
Wow, okay. That's a lot. How many
do I have? Yeah, that's my comment, is by the end of it, there was certainly a little bit of bloat in it, which you have 52 scenarios, 58 scenarios that you have to get out over the course of the year. I would have been bored had there not been. And as you're learning them, each individual one comes out, and that's fine. But at the end of the year, sometimes you pick it up like, which one was this one? I don't remember. And so, yeah, just be prepared for that.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things is the icon reference in my rules. It's 6 pages long. The icon list is on page 4 and 6. And then there's other stuff on page 5 in that same sidebar area.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, it's kind of weird. Maybe that's because it was intended as a printed out thing. And I guess in that case, you're always checking the right hand side or something.
Yeah.
But I did find that a little weird since I was referencing the rules digitally.
I mean, I printed it. I didn't have a problem with that. It was useful.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, over and over you printed. Well, so that's not a big deal. But the I did find a couple things confusing, and that I didn't seem like they were clarified. Like, in the game, when you reach the treasure chest, the game ends immediately. And often it seems like you want to mark all the spaces around the treasure chest to get as much experience points as you can, like you said. And you can't, because as soon as you mark one of the spaces, you're done and you stop, so you'll never get the other one marked. And I'm not sure if I was playing that correctly or if I was misunderstanding the rules. So I did find that confusing and felt like there's a little bit of lack of clarity. I think, though, BGG, there's plenty of people asking questions and answering questions, so it was resolvable. I think in the end I did get it right.
That's good. I only remember during the process, just as there were literal conversations and clarifications on the Discord with the designers, and that was fun.
That's much better. So there's also a Discord to go with this.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. All right. Well, I want to hear more about that whole campaign and how that went. But first, let's talk about the game itself then. Well, as we already said, it's a roll and write. You have a character who's exploring a dungeon. Each sheet brings the character and the five dungeons that person will explore. And I don't know, maybe the numbers change for some characters, but
no.
There are four dungeons and a boss dungeon that you get to do. And what's pretty neat is you could choose which order you do them in. You're not going sequentially. So you could do the first one because you think, oh, this one's going to have items that I want, or it's going to give me more experience points, or maybe the monster's a little easier and I want to get more experience so I could get to the harder monsters. So you got choices right from the beginning. You got choices on besides which character you picked, which of the four dungeons to go into. And I thought that was really neat. So it kind of makes this into a little bit of a mini campaign game. And in the rules, it even says that the dungeons are not necessarily in order from easiest to hardest or anything. It's like, you know, you choose and you know, the first one may be really hard. So, you know, consider this when you're picking your dungeon. The dungeons are basically a 6x6 grid of squares. There is an entrance and an exit. The entrance is a little door icon. The exit is a little treasure chest. And besides that, there's a bunch of other icons on the board. There'll be icons for the monsters, for gold coins that you could find, keys, potions, traps, And maybe that's it. Maybe there's a couple other things. I think especially the boss levels might have more things too. As you play, you're going to roll dice, because this is after all roll and write, and use those dice to mark your spaces on the dungeon as you explore. Now you can explore anywhere you want, starting from the door, and when you start, you have a simple weapon that lets you has a range of one, so you always have to mark spaces that are orthogonally adjacent to one of your existing spaces. But because of the way it is, you could, in theory, go up and then run all the way down and expand on the bottom, and then run up all the way back to the top and expand to the top. So you could do however you want. You're just sort of expanding your mesh of area you've covered and cleared. There are weapons you could upgrade, and that changes your range and what spaces you're able to mark and how far they have to be and whatnot, which is pretty neat. But you have to unlock those. What am I leaving out, Julius?
How do you get experience points to be able to unlock those?
Oh, okay. So there's a couple different ways. One of them, well, first of all, you have to get to the treasure chest. You have to make a complete path from your starting point to the treasure chest, and it has to be a connected path. At the beginning, that's not too hard because you can only move one space at a time. But later on, as you get other weapons, you could, for example, have a range of 3 and mark one space and then a space 3 away and then another space 3 away. So potentially you could get to your treasure chest really fast. But now you have an unconnected line where not every single space between the door and the chest is filled in. And when I say every single space, I already said it's a 6x6 grid. As long as you can follow a path from the door to the exit, as circuitous as you want it to be, that considers having completed the dungeon. That's considered completing the dungeon. If you didn't complete it, then you won't get experience points, but at least you get out with whatever loot you found. If you did complete it, you're going to add up experience points for all the columns you completed. You're going to add up experience points for the monsters you defeated and potentially other stuff, I guess. And you add up all those experience points and bubble them up in the top half of your sheet where your character is. And as you gain experience, you get to unlock stuff that will make you more powerful. And you could also spend, if you succeeded, you could spend your experience to upgrade your weapons or relics, which are nice little powerful items you have access to.
Generally, they're limited ones. Weapons, when you're upgrading those, they're something that you'll have throughout the course of the adventure. And relics are something usually they are one-time use or have a limited number of charges. So those are more powerful but more limited.
Yep. And as you play, you're probably going to end up getting a mix of upgraded weapons and relics. Just whatever makes sense to you as you're playing. So that's how you get experience points, right? Once you've done all 4 dungeons, you're now able to go fight the boss, which is generally going to be harder. And it's a much bigger dungeon. I think it's probably twice as big, but I'm not exactly sure.
It is.
Looks like it could be. Okay. And I think the go varies from dungeon to dungeon. Sometimes you just need to get to the exit alive. Sometimes you might need to kill the boss first or not. I think that varies. I haven't played enough to really remember. But that's basically how the game works, right? The rolling the dice, there's wandering monsters you could encounter. There's dice you're rolling for the monsters. So that's why Julius was saying you need two different colored dice. Some of the dice you're rolling represent the monster, and if they're high enough, the monsters hit you. So you could take damage as you're exploring from these monsters. You could also kill the monsters in a similar fashion, which is to mark spaces around the monster with a high enough number to get past their armor. And if you mark enough spaces to cover all their hit points, say a monster has 3 hit points, you got to surround 3 spaces around it with numbers higher than its armor class. If you've done that, you kill the monster, which is nice because now the monster stops hitting you. And also, if you get to the treasure, you'll get more experience points. That's basically the game. You're rolling dice and marking spaces on the map. You're making choices about where to mark the spaces and how to do it once you've got upgrades. It's pretty interesting though, because it's not always obvious, and as you start playing, you realize things like, oh yes, I want to get to the exit, but I also want to unlock these things, so I need to fill in the bottom of the dungeon with the bad numbers until I get the good numbers and fill in the good spaces. And that kind of gives you a few bonus rolls as you're, say, trying to kill the monster or unlock a trap or whatever. And you have choices there. Each character also has a special ability that generally lets you tweak the dice in different ways. And from what I've seen, they're all different. there's also other monsters also behave a little differently, so that affects the choices you make. There's treasure on the map, there's traps, and there's lots of different things that affect the choice of where you're going and how you're doing things. Like, for example, if you're trying to get more points, you don't want to get to the treasure too quick, so you need to avoid the spaces next to it, even if there's something else you want there. So it's surprisingly deep for a rolling ride, I thought.
I will say also, it's surprisingly deep for a short amount of time to be able to play it. And it's, to me, it only took about 15, 20 minutes to finish a whole session.
Wow, okay, that's faster than me. Well, I'm not really sure. I'm thinking it took me maybe half an hour. But I also like that you don't have to finish a whole session, right? Once you finish a dungeon, you could put it away and come back later. Yeah. Because each dungeon is a complete thing in and of itself. You finish a dungeon, you get any experience points, unlock anything you've unlocked and bought, and now you're ready to start over. So you could put this away, come back in a week, and pick a different dungeon from that sheet.
Although by that point in time, there'll be another dungeon release, so you don't have a week.
That's true. So are they still releasing these?
They are not. So this, well, actually, hold it 1 second. They are not releasing any more in the dungeon pages line. That was a year-long thing that completed December of 2023. But there is another set of dungeon pages that is either coming out or coming out soon. Mm. Let me confirm.
Like a wilderness or something like that.
So yes, so they're going to be doing Overland Adventures. So there's going to be more dungeon pages coming at one point in time in 2024. I'm not sure when. But throughout 2023, from the beginning until the end, every week, there was a brand new adventure to do. And for a good 4 or 5 months, when another one came out, I was like, that's my lunch right there. I was pulling that down, nice, and playing through that. And that was a grand old time with figuring out what the new thing was. And throughout the year also, they would repeat repeat adventures. And then when a new one came out, you would just be surprised to be able to see it, to figure out what his new abilities were, and you'd be able to sort of see the ideas that you have between different versions of an adventure and how their stories sort of fit between them and tie things together. And then you also start to see similarities between different types of monsters, like a sleeping zombie or an attacking zombie, and all sorts of different stuff. It was an experience to be able to have that weekly subscription, to be able to see the new stuff coming out, the instant connection you have with the designer, to be able to respond back and talk about the things that were interesting and share thoughts and comments and questions. And it was more than just the experience of playing the game. Was that for that year, there was a community that was around it that was fun to be able to participate in.
Yeah, that sounds really neat. Was it a Discord for members only, or could anybody join it later on?
It was not a Discord for members only. The Discord did say that you were not allowed to post the files or the links to the files because they were being released to backers only. But anybody who wanted could come join that Discord. That Discord is still open and still available. I'm still a member of it. There was a recent issue and recently about someone getting in there. But yeah.
I'm guessing once they do the Kickstarter for the other one, I assume it'll be a Kickstarter also, then it'll get more lively again.
I assume.
Do you know if that one's also going to be a dungeon a week or an adventure a week idea?
I assume.
Okay. That'd be really neat. Was this expensive, the Kickstarter? Wow. Okay. So the core set is only $6 from PNP Arcade. That's $1 a hero. So it's not bad. Oh, and the year-long adventure set is $20.
So yeah, the year-long adventure set is what I was talking about. It appears, though, that actually the Kickstarter for the next set did happen. So they've already got It's Dangerous Space, which is a sci-fi version of it, along with Dungeon Pages Overland Adventure. And that is one that goes out once a week, once a month instead of once a week. I'm not nearly as familiar with it. I didn't continue on after doing it for a year, for various reasons. Most the biggest reason is probably that I just wanted to keep it fresh, do other things rather than doing another round of the same thing. But I'm the sort of person who will take a break from something and then probably jump back into it the round after, and may very well.
Yep. And it looks like it's available from PMP Arcade, which I've never really visited this place before, but they have a lot of PMP games. It's not just a single publisher or anything. Like, there's Mintworks on here, which is a game I've seen before. I think I had it in the little mint version. So there's a print and play version of it. There's a free page. So you could get Mintwork for free, the print and play. Mm-hmm. Try it out. And if you like it, then you could go buy the little mint. Maquis is available here.
Yeah, lots of stuff on their website.
Utopia Engine. Lots of stuff, yeah.
But yeah, I liked that whole thing. It's still ongoing if you want to come join in for it for Dangerous Space and come join on at this point in time for the rest of 2024 and enjoy what's going on another round of it. I'm looking and I'm seeing that they're doing it again. So I had a lot of fun with it last year. It's definitely an experience that I wanted to share with all the listeners. Being part of that community, I'm not familiar with anybody else who's ever been able to develop something like that, then I had a lot of fun just with that alone.
Yeah. And so I guess if you get the one that's ongoing now, is that the space one, I guess?
That's the space one, Dangerous Space. It's the sci-fi version of the same thing.
Okay. So if you get that, then some number of it would be out. You could play through them to catch up and then start doing the one a week, I guess.
Yep.
52 by the end of the year, they said. But you said that maybe doing it one a month?
So there's two things that are going on right now. There's Dangerous Space that's going on. That's the once a week. And then there's Overland Adventures, which is more of dungeon pages. And so that one is coming out once a month, it looks like.
And that one is compatible with the other one, apparently. So,
yes.
Well, I'm not sure what that means because you're still only doing one page at a time.
It means that all the rules are the same. Dungeon Pages does have different rules about, you know, having to fill in spaces and things like that. It's not the same type of division as the other one.
Yep. And we didn't mention it, but the game was designed by Jason Greeno and Jason Tagmeier. I've not heard of Jason Greeno before, but Jason Tagmeier is the owner of Buttonshy, who's done many, many other games over there. Yeah, this is a really cool game. I don't know if I'm going to get into it. But I had fun playing it. I really enjoyed the puzzles.
Super inexpensive just to get into it. I mean, they've got their everything new. I mean, it was in the Kickstarter. It was $25 for all the stuff. All the stuff for $25. If you have a printer and you have a pencil and you have six dice, for $25, just the amount of value, the amount of enjoyment that you can have for $25 is nuts.
Yeah. I mean, you said 15 minutes for a puzzle.
30 minutes. Yeah. I probably was rushing to fit it in the lunch. But yeah.
So that would be like 13 hours of total play for 52 of them. It probably took me more like half an hour. So I got 26 hours. Or I would get 26 hours out of it.
Could be very well that also I would split it up over multiple lunches. I don't know. It could be. I was also just excited and just wanted to go run through it.
But it's like we already said, I like that you could just do a piece of it and come back later. You could, you know, do one dungeon and then play next time. And that's what I ended up doing as I was playing. It's like I do a couple and then I take a break and do chores and move my laundry or whatever and then come back and do another
one. It's a really fun puzzle. Figuring out how to do that line to be able to eke out all of the benefits. Because during the year, I remember chatting with people on the Discord about who was maxing stuff out. What was the true max that you could really get? What was the best order to go in and which of the upgrades was the most important? And there were these like meta discussions that were tying into the different ones and live competitions. Not live, but sort of mini competing for leaderboard type stuff and just enjoying the conversation. I the puzzle felt real good. All of it felt real good.
This sounds like the game between the game, doesn't it? Wow. That's pretty cool, Julius.
There's no game going on between the game. There's a discussion. If you want to call the podcast the game between the game, you're welcome to do so, but that doesn't make it so.
All that discussion and all that stuff in Discord that you mentioned about where people were like competing and trying to find the best options, that sounds like a game in itself.
Yeah, at one point in time, Albert's going to be like, I posted on the podcast forum, the One Player Guild, and it was the best part of my day because it was the game between the game. I'd be like, Albert, get it.
Oh, poor Julius. He's just upset because I'm right. All right.
All Julius. Right. Go take it to the Discord, Albert.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks for listening. We love feedback, so we love hearing from you. You can reach me at julius@oneplayerpodcast.com or jlbird on BGG, and Albert can be reached at albert@oneplayerpodcast.com or fractaloon on BGG. Our website is oneplayerpodcast.com with the number one, and we're also on Twitter @oneplayerpodcast. The intro music is copyright Angus, can be found at jamendo.com. The transition music is copyright by Dan Elduche Pancaldi, whose page is at danpancaldi.com. The One Player Podcast is protected under a Creative Commons share-alike license. Thanks for listening.